IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi, I'm Sarthak, and I welcome you to one more episode of All Things Policy. In this episode, we are going to talk about women and social networks. Basically, how social networks could potentially benefit women. But in case of India, access to these networks might be restricted. It might be difficult to avail various services that these networks could have provided. This discussion is based on the findings of a couple of papers. One of the papers is Mothers' Social Network and Socioeconomic Gradients of Isolation. Another paper is The Influence of Mothers-in-Law on Women in India. The link for both the papers are along with this podcast. Please do check the papers. Joining me in this episode are my colleagues, Suman and Apurv. Hi, Suman. Hi, Apurv. Welcome to All Things Policy.
Hi, Sarthak.
Hey, Sarthak. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we are recording a podcast together.
Yeah, all three of us together.
Yes.
Yeah,
Suman used to chicken out every time we
were planning.
Yeah, so since you are here, why don't you mention about what you do at Takshashila and about some upcoming programs?
Okay, so I'm the staff program manager and I manage the postgraduate program in public policy, which is a 48-week long program. This helps the participants and the students take a deep dive into policy making and policy analysis. Application process for the January cohort has already started and the program begins on 15th of January 2022. The application deadline is 8th of January 2022. We also have an early bird application where we offer scholarships for early bird applications. And the last date for early bird application is 4th December. So if your listeners are interested in taking a deep dive into public policy, then PGP is the right program for them.
Hi, everybody. My name is Suman. I am the program manager for the Graduate Certificate of the Public Policy Program. If you're not so inclined to the 12 months of learning public policy, but you just want to get a feel of it before you make your final decision. The Graduate Certificate in Public Policy Program is the course for you. We have four different specializations, and the application timelines, etc., are just the same as Apurv mentioned. So you can go over to our website, school.takshashila.org.in. You can check out what suits you best, what interests you, and do apply. Our courses start 15th of Jan.
Thanks, Suman. Thanks, Apurv. So coming back, so we will be discussing about social networks and women. But before we look at the impact of social networks on women, we need to understand what are social networks and what are their significance. So Suman, can you please elaborate on this?
Yeah. So most of our listeners are English speaking, elite, urban men and women. So I mean, the English sense of it, social networks, is very clear and we all take it for granted. For us, our friends outside of our, connections outside of our immediate family are things that, is very second nature, very much part of our lives. Okay, so, but we have to get out of our bubble and see what it is for less privileged women in our country. So when we're talking about social networks, it just means the connect with the outside world for a woman. I'm sure a lot of people on this listening to this podcast will be surprised to know that a lot of women in this country do not actually interact with people outside their families. So we have to understand how this thing plays on people's lives. And this is the vast majority of our population. So essentially, so that is what social networks means in policy in India kind of a context.
Also, if we can chime in, Sarthak, I think the social network, the concept of social network is deeply rooted into the idea of social capital, which was given by French sociologist Bourdieu. Bourdieu argued that an individual's social network or his social relationship or his or her relationship with outside world depends upon the very position and status of that individual within the society, right? And he also argued that a social capital enables a person to exert power on an individual or a group who can mobilize the resources, right? So when Suvan was talking about in terms of gender in India, women in India, it's quite evident because it's a patriarchal society, and we also have this phenomenon called patrilocal or patrilineal, which essentially means that the woman gets married to a man and she has to stay with the husband, and most of the time it's the in-laws that are part of her ecosystem. And this paper, or both the papers that you have spoken about, Sarthak, actually argue how the in-laws and how this ecosystem curbs the very freedom and liberty and autonomy of those women, right? And that is the whole idea of women and, you know, the social network that is getting curbed or, you know, reduced social network relationship.
Yeah, thanks, Apoor. I just wanted to add one generic point here about social networks. So when do we need social networks? So if, let's say, you want to avail different kinds of services, right, different kinds of goods, ideally, we would assume that the markets will function and they will provide for it, or the governmental institutions might provide for it. But in case of India, that might not always be the case. For different kinds of goods and services, markets might be missing. The institutions might not be working as expected, right? So as you don't have these mechanisms in place, so what will you be dependent on? Most likely the immediate community. So in case of a country like India, social networks play this role as well. And one of the most common example is how caste networks might have been playing some of the roles for the members of the same caste. I mean, it might be functional for the members of the same caste and it might be dysfunctional for others. But this is also an example of social network, right? So, but the thing is, this is an example of social network, but women in India might find it difficult to access or create these kind of networks. And this is something. These networks could have provided them services, but since they're not able to access these networks and already the governmental institutions on the markets are not providing the services, it puts them at greater disadvantage. Now, how are social networks especially very, very important for women? How can social networks play a significant role for women? Suman, would you like to chime in?
Yeah, I'd like to just point to another body of work actually by Dr. Annis Evans. She is doing a lot of work on gender divide and she has a big project coming up. So I follow her literature very closely. Okay. As part of that, she has actually talked about fraternal capital, as in capital that men have because of bonding between themselves. And she traces this back for many centuries. Okay. So she goes back to the formation of guilds and how men would hang out together and therefore build trust, therefore build connections, therefore build networks, which would further their business, which would help them be, you know, in a better place. Similarly, with time, this has come down a bit to the women, but we have not actually, harnessed it completely because women are more, are kept within the households. They bear disproportionate load of childcare, house care, whatever. So just as these networks helped men to further their cause, these networks should also help women to further their own, their goals, or just to tap, just to fulfill your potential that each person has within ourselves. So in that sense, these networks are very, very important. And I think Dr. Annis Evans has done a really good job on actually, making an argument for this kind of building of networks within amongst women. So yeah, that's what I had in terms of this thing.
Basically women, these networks can help empower women. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And I think these networks can also play a significant role in this regard, that women can get some amount of social capital, as Apoor mentioned, and which can help them participate in different kind of social movements, political movements. It can lead to their empowerment in the long run.
Yeah. See, even job offers that are made, etc. I mean, you know, how do you learn about these things? It is through your networks or through, you know, all these connections that you make. When men have harnessed it really well, women seem to be a little hesitant. And also the avenues for that have not been present all this while. So, which is why social networks for women make a lot of sense in this.
Also, just to add to what both of you have just spoken about, I think the social network in terms of gender is something is I mean, obviously it's an under-researched area, but it's something that you know, that has a bigger ramification. So, Sarthak, when you mentioned about how social capital, social networks with respect to caste have helped people get access to business, finance, capital, and build up entrepreneurship, something of that sort has not happened with respect to gender or with respect to women. And, you know, when you were, you know, I couldn't help but recall the works of Kaivan Munshi or R. Vaidyanathan, who have, you know, who have sort of examined caste as an institution, but also as a tool of social capital. Right, and a similar sort of a body of literature has been written by Chandrabhan Prasad, his famous books Defying All Odds, which argues that, you know, how caste networks can help people from vulnerable section and marginalized societies to build social network capital and hence set up their businesses. But that has not happened in terms with respect to gender of women in India.
So, Sarthak, how do you think, I mean, what does the data from these papers actually point us to? What is the network formation and access of these networks for women?
Yeah. So, Suman, the papers mostly point to the same direction. They say that women in India are isolated. And I can give you a comparison. So, in the US, on an average, a female has 8 friends, 8 social connections with whom she can say, share different kinds of details. But the findings that we see from these papers are completely are quite different. So one study is from Uttar Pradesh, Jaunpur. They find out that on an average, the woman that they have considered in the sample, she interacts with 1.6 individuals in her district about issues that are important to her. And those things which are kind of private, she just can share it with 0.7 individuals, right? Things related to reproductive health, fertility, family planning. So if you consider close peers, so one female has 0.7 close peers on an average. And 22% of the total sample did not have any close peers at all. So this is from rural Uttar Pradesh, Jaunpur. Now, there were some findings from rural Orissa. Here the study is, the sample that they have considered is of mothers. And they find out that on an average, a mother has 3.2 connections to other mothers with similarly aged children. And the average mother has just one connection with whom they can talk about their children. And an average mother has just 0.5 connection with whom they can talk about personal issues, right? So when if you look at the developed economies like US, it's like 8 friends per female. But in case of India, it's somewhere in between the range of 1 to 3, depends on the places in rural areas. So women don't have the closed peers. They don't have people with whom they can interact. They can discuss their personal matters, private matters.
That's a very sobering piece of data. Yeah. So I think on that note, we should take a break and we may come back after the break.
Coming back, so from the data, we can see that women in India are isolated. Now, what are the reasons? What could be some of the reasons why women are facing these barriers? Why they are not part of these networks? Why are they not able to access these networks?
It appears that it is more of a social barrier, in the sense that because we are a patriarchal society, not only do husbands have control over the women's agency, the mother-in-law in the family also plays a huge role in decisions regarding, say, reproductive health, family planning choice, etc. So her influence, the mother-in-law's influence, is oversized in the entire thing. And therefore, it has been found that she acts as a barrier for the woman to even make networks outside of her home. And whatever networks that the woman has seems to be from within the family, like you know, it could be sister-in-law, you know, those kind of networks, but even they are bogged down by the same kind of structure. It's not to say that the mother-in-law is the reason one for what, but it appears that she has an outsized say in the managing, you know, in matters, in decisions regarding to these kind of family planning or such.
Yeah, so the paper actually looks at that. So they look at co-residence with mother-in-law as a factor. And what they're trying to do is they're looking at the dynamics between mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. Now, there are two things which can happen, right? One is, yes, the mother-in-law can restrict the daughter-in-law. In that case, the daughter-in-law will not be able to step out and will not be able to create networks, will not be able to access networks. The other thing that can happen is the daughter-in-law can tap into the mother-in-law's existing social networks. That way, the daughter-in-law's social networks can even increase. But what they find out is, if a woman is living with her mother-in-law, then she has 18% fewer closer peers within the village. So basically, the daughter-in-law is not able to tap into the mother-in-law's social networks. Rather, her social network is also getting restricted here. And so when you mentioned also, about... Yeah, go ahead, Apoor.
Sorry. Also, very related point is, I think, the role of migration as well, right? Because, I mean, as Suman has said, that it's a patrilocal and patrilineal society, which means that, of course, step one is when the woman goes to her husband or her in-laws' house, so she has to dismantle all her social network from her native sort of place. And then if you belong to a migratory sort of section of a society who keeps on migrating, then that becomes more difficult, and that's a double whammy on women, because every time they have to sort of dismantle and destroy the social network and move to another geography.
Yeah, exactly.
That also takes a toll on their social network and capital.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And apart from this, the kind of social norms that are there, which also put restrictions on the mobility of women, right? So married women leaving their house, socializing freely, might not be considered okay in some of these households.
Yeah. And also this paper talks about, a very small percentage of women are actually able to go out by themselves. And the peers also have a role in actually making the woman go to the public, to the health center, the primary health center. So there is always somebody accompanying the woman, either outside or to the PHC. So she does not have too much agency. In more cases, it is the mother-in-law who accompanies her to the PHC or elsewhere. So very few women actually go out with their social peers. The peers actually, when they do come in, they help with information dissemination, so they know what is happening outside, who in the village is doing what, etc. It could, manifest as gossip, but they still get information on such things. So the social networks, that's how they come into play at that point.
Yeah, and one more thing, in case of Indian society, generally we'll find people belonging to similar communities, they interacting with one another.
Yeah.
So there is more interaction between people from the same caste or from the same religion, right? So that might also be one of the reasons which also restricts formation of social networks across caste, maybe across religion, maybe. And the studies that they have carried out, the papers talk about, they also find similar trends. So again, even if there is a female network, it will be having membership from similar communities.
Also, another factor could be, and I don't think so it has been covered in any of these papers, but it is also a related factor, is the very access of women to public spaces, right? Because of poor law and order and because of poor women's safety conditions in India, and the 2011 book, Why Loiter, why Shilpa Phadke and Samira Khan, and they talk about these factors, because just because the streets and the public spaces are not safe, women can just not go out. And if they can't access these public spaces, they just can't build these social networks.
Yeah, something, again, an anecdote kind of thing. But if you observe around you, right, you will find a lot of these chaitapris and all. Mostly it will be men who will be sitting in these places, but you will not find these kind of spaces for women where just women can come and chill. So that also is somehow restricted.
Absolutely.
The book, while we took, I think the most important point the book made was that women should claim public spaces as their own. And the idea of safety is not women being inside the closed spaces, but the fact that we are, you know, claiming the public space as much as our own. As so I think that part gets missed out in most safety talking about safety, women's safety. But I think that was the major takeaway from that, you know, when I read.
Yeah. And the paper on Mothers Network, it also talks about two more things which are also slightly interesting. They find out that women who have a higher socioeconomic status, they have restricted networks. Right? We would assume that women with higher socioeconomic status will have access to larger networks, will be part of larger networks, but that is not necessarily the case. So they give two instances. They say that dominant caste women, on an average, have around 0.6 fewer connections than women from disadvantaged castes and tribes, from the scheduled caste, scheduled tribes. And they also find out that mothers who are wealthier, they have fewer connections than those who are at the bottom. And the gap between the networks for dominant caste women and the disadvantaged caste tribes, and the gap between the wealthier women and those who are at the bottom, that gap has also not changed over a period of time. Either it has increased or it has remained constant.
Okay, this is quite counterintuitive in the sense that we would expect that for dominant caste women, we have more networks, but it appears that the caste barriers play a role there in the sense that they don't want to be seen with the whole other caste women, or even the, maybe it's also the labor force participation that makes
sense. Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, so maybe women at the bottom, when it comes to the socioeconomic criteria, right, maybe they have to work outside, they have to participate in the labor force, as a result of which they have to build those networks. But women at the top might not be participating in the labor force, and that might be leading to a situation where they have lesser connections. Yeah, so I mean, these all possibly explain why there are barriers for women when it comes to accessing these networks. But how all these things will be impacting the situation of women? How does it impact their health situation? How does it impact their economic opportunities?
Yeah, the impact is just that women are not going out enough, therefore the jobs, I mean, if one half of your population is not working, then, you know, we have a big problem. Hence, the labor force participation rate has been, reducing over the years. And we don't seem to have a fix as to how to, solve this issue. Yeah. So what do you think are the policy implications for this?
I think one policy implication was, I was just going through the NFHS data, and it says that the use of contraceptive in women is around 57%, right? Which is very low, right? Given we have a whole range of family planning policies and schemes for the past 60 years. And, you know, it completely sort of correlates to what we are talking about. So since women don't have social networks, they don't have people or peer with whom they can share about their reproductive or sexual health related issues. And just because they can't talk about it, they can't seek access to some of these healthcare services, right? And the data is out there open. So it has a major policy implications with respect to, you know, access to contraceptives and reproductive health schemes and policies.
Yeah, exactly, Apoor. So again, the data also points to the same thing. They find out that if a female has one more peer outside her home, it increases her likelihood of visiting a family planning clinic by almost 67%. And again, if she has a close outside peer, it also increases her probability of using modern contraceptive methods. So these have massive public health outcomes. So what is happening here is, when you are part of these networks, when you have access to those networks, the information that you are, maybe you would not have got, you are getting it. And secondly, since you are getting the information from a network, they might consider it to be more credible. As a result of which, they might accept the information, right? So some of these things which would have been considered taboo now, which would not have been discussed, now they are being discussed and they are being accepted. And at the same time, right, you are getting appear and different kind of restrictions might have been imposed on you by the society, by the immediate family members. But now when you're having a friend or a peer with whom you can share things, you're having a companion who can help you resist the different kind of constraints that are being imposed on you. And you will be availing different services. You will be going to a family planning clinic. You will be using different kinds of modern methods.
Yeah, just moving away a little from the health perspective to general representation and, related issues. I read about a paper that has been, that has spoken about, what self-help groups within villages or, rural areas do to representation. Okay. I mean, we've had this debate for a long time about reservation of some positions within a panchayati system for women. And it has always, there has always been a criticism that we will have a system of pati sarpanch, which means that token, there is a woman as a sarpanch, but the man controls everything. So what they found in this study was that when reservation is just done as just one policy of reservation, you tend to fall into the pati sarpanch system. But when reservation is combined with a good system of self-help groups within a particular area, you see that the results are far better. Again, you can trace it back to that social network, because when women are just by themselves, they get shouted down in this panchayat system. But when they already have experience within their self-help groups to, about various other issues, they have the confidence to talk, to hold their own in all these places. And they also have the backing of this network that they built. So they're able to take up issues that matter to women in the village, the issues that actually, have a bearing on everybody there. So that, I think, is a very important part of, the entire system, societal system as we see it now.
So this is an interesting point, Suman. And this actually reflects how social networks are important and how they can play a very, very significant role in the political, economic empowerment of women, social empowerment of women. So thank you, Suman. Thanks, Apoor, for joining me in this episode of All Things Policy. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We'll meet again in one more episode of All Things Policy.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Sartan.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.